Welcome to the Scrum.org Community Podcast, a podcast from the home of Scrum. In this podcast, we feature professional Scrum trainers and other Scrum practitioners sharing their stories and experiences to help learn from the experience of others. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Scrum.org Community Podcast. My name is Patricia Kong. I'm with Scrum.org, and I will be your guest host today, giving Dave West a little bit of a break. So today's discussion is about evidence-based management, also known as EBM, which is a framework that Kurt Bittner and I, who's on this podcast, have been co-developing this for 10 years. And the notion of EBM, evidence-based management, and the difference and the similarities and et cetera, with objective key results, OKRs, which is the model that's been really popular, especially in the management consulting group. So for today's discussion, not only do we have Kurt Bittner, who's my colleague again at Scrum.org, looking at enterprise solutions, and he's the editor for our professional series book. We have Laurens Bonema from the Netherlands, and he is a professional Scrum trainer, agile management consultant, and to my delight, a graphic facilitator. Did I leave anything else out, gentlemen?
No, that's pretty much it.
Good for me.
All right. Well, thanks for being here. Wanted to have a short discussion about specifically EBM and OKR. So for those who aren't that familiar, evidence-based management is a framework from Scrum.org created by Ken Schwaber. And for us, it is focused on, and this is very general, but you can say that Patricia Kong said this, it's very general, but it's focused on measurement, management, and empiricism toward goals. So in a nutshell, that's what it looks like. And objective key results, OKRs, to me is really focused on milestones and results toward objectives. So we have an EBM guide and we have an EBM class, a PAL EBM class. And a lot of the things that come up during that class have been, hey, what are the similarities? What's the difference? Why would we care about EBM when we have OKRs that everybody seems to love? So for me, what I've been hearing and what I see is that the similarities are, there's an objective, a goal orientation. There's this notion maybe of improvement, alignment, transparency, evidence or measurement. I'm interested in, Laurens, what other similarities you see in EBM and OKRs? And then maybe what would be interesting is for us to then go into the differences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I see in addition to what you already mentioned is that both methodologies, they truly encourage organizations to constantly evaluate their performance and to adjust as they need to or as they feel they need to, and to run some experiments with it and to see, empirically look at what is happening and then adjust as they need to. They aim to align the efforts of the organization towards achieving specific goals. And they could be strategic or non-strategic, but goals. And they're designed to be adaptable, right? So goals can change, objectives can change. You do that as is necessary based on the performance and changing circumstances. Now, that is a very obvious statement in a sense. But usually, they're like an answer to hardcore KPI thinking, right? We have this number, it's set in stone, we have to hit it, this is the target, and let's not change anything. And then both EBM and OKRs, in my opinion, they help you have a more human take on that.
What about you, Kurt?
I see a lot of the same things with OKR. I see OKRs as a very specific, in a sense, technique that you can use to apply the ideas that we've described in EBM. So in EBM, we have three different kinds of goals or three different levels of goals. There's a strategic goal, which tends to be multi-year in focus. We have an intermediate goal, which tends to be, sort of quarterly or so, quarterly to half yearly in focus. And we have immediate tactical goals, which tend to be like, you know, if you're listening to this and familiar with Scrum, which you probably are, it tends to be basically like a sprint goal, something that's very short term in focus, and very focused on a specific result that the team is wanting to achieve. So with OKRs, generally OKRs are quarterly in focus. Doesn't have to be, but typically quarterly in focus. So that aligns relatively well with intermediate goals. How EBM and OKRs reinforce each other is that OKRs don't really talk a lot about long-term strategic goals. So that part of EBM can be sort of brought into the picture, and OKRs don't talk a lot about sort of the day-to-day, week-to-week level of goals, which is where the immediate tactical goals in EBM can come into play. So I see the two techniques complementing each other, and OKRs being kind of a very specific way to apply EBM. EBM could be applied in other ways. So it's EBM's more general framework, OKR more specific technique.
All right. The general framework piece for me too is that within EBM and the notion of the goals is that we have the four key value areas, which are lenses that can help say, hey, here's how we're going, where do we want to improve, and kind of inform those goals. And I know that we're obviously very big on experimentation, empiricism. Now, I know that the time frame for OKR is quarterly, but is experimentation required with OKRs or no?
It's not required. It's not necessary to do that to a quarterly rhythm. That's just a habit that has formed. It's similar to EBM in a sense, where you also don't have a prescribed specific time frame to do anything. There's just a certain logic to it, like long-term, intermediate, and short-term goals. And for OKRs, they tend to be, well, mostly intermediate, if you compare them to the EBM rhythm.
So let's get into some of the juicy stuff about what's going on in the industry and with some of your clients, Loren. So I know a lot of people are coming to us, and I know to different consultancies and research firms, and saying, hey, please help me with my KPIs. And they might say this as, please help me with my KPIs, please help me with my metrics, please help me with my agile KPIs, agile metrics. And it kind of leads down into the path if we're guiding them into talking about, okay, what are your goals? What are the different outcomes and objectives you're looking for? What are some of those asks that you're hearing specifically? And at least I know in the US, we're seeing some companies, not even companies, I would say even in our industry, like the teams, the scrum masters, everybody's trying to show their worth is a really bad way to see it, but they're trying to do that because they're nervous about their jobs. And so I wanted to see if there's anything happening similarly on your side.
Yeah, actually there is. There's a lot of ask for, because how can we prove that this thing that we're doing is actually working? So there's a lot of that behind it, but there's also quite a genuine puzzlement as to, okay, so what should we be measuring, right? So we're currently usually measuring billable hours or like time spent, and we know that that's not right, but what should we measure, and what do all those other terms mean? Because apparently we haven't been able to like clearly define that yet, or it's hard to find, or I honestly wouldn't know why it's that hard to find, but for me it's always like just a Google search away, and then I have like this myriad of options of stuff you can measure. And I think that that's the problem, that a lot of people, they just want to, so where should I get started? What's the minimum set? What's the base set? And there I usually start with just really basic flow metrics, and then build it from that. Those aren't even tied into EBM per se or to OKRs. Just get them into the habit of measuring something, and then, okay, so now you're doing this, and then, okay, let's move to a more strategic framework of measurement to balance things out. Because the thing that goes wrong with all the measures is they expect to measure only one or two things and then be done. as opposed to truly understanding that you have to balance the metrics that you use, like you would in the quadrants of EBM, to make sure that you're not only in one quadrant and therefore sub-optimizing unintentionally and possibly destroying your company in the process.
So I do, and Kurt, feel free to elaborate here. I do think that there's some correlation where for the four key value areas, the quadrants, that some of the flow metrics can fall into ability to innovate and time to market, which look at the organizational capability. So we start with the flow metrics, or we start with something, right? We don't boil the ocean. And then we get, okay, this is what we can measure. It's easy to measure. Kurt, what have you done when people are starting to make that step? Okay, we're trying to see what we understand about ourselves, essentially.
Well, one of the things that I think a lot of, and this ties into the flow metrics idea. So organizations moving from, let's say, a more traditional plan-oriented approach are not really used to working with feedback cycles. So they're used to developing a plan and executing to that plan. And the problem with that, and this includes with EBM and OKRs, is that if your assumptions are wrong and you're working to the wrong set of assumptions, it could take a very long time before you realize that you know something about your assumptions are wrong, like a major goal. So one of the things that people need to do first is just basically start measuring more frequently. So improving what EBM would call a time to market kind of measure, but just basically, you know, do a small bit of work, form some hypotheses, do a small bit of work, measure whether you achieved what you wanted to achieve, and then adapt based on that feedback. So getting into a feedback loop is really important just to begin with, because until you do that, you can't really do much of anything else. You're just working potentially on wrong assumptions, and it'll take you a long time or maybe forever before you understand that those assumptions are wrong. But once you do that, then you're faced with the question of, well, what kind of goals should we be working toward? And this is an area where in EBM, we also talk about a couple of different kinds of measures. We talk about measures that are focused on activities. In other words, you tell somebody to do something and they do it. So that's an activity-based measure. There are also output-oriented measures, which are, you tell somebody to produce something, like produce this report, or, install this package, or, upgrade the security configuration of your system or something else. So that's output oriented. And the problem with that, really, when you start talking about what customers want, is that customers don't care about what you did, and they don't care about what you produced. They care about whether, in a sense, their experiences have changed. So a third set of measures, which is usually more useful for setting goals, are outcome-oriented measures. And in EBM, we talk about a satisfaction gap that the customer has between where they are today and where they would like to be. So what we find is that it's really useful to set your goals in terms of outcomes. And that has a sort of a benefit to OKRs, is that, when I look at examples for OKRs in literature and in papers that people have written and books, a lot of what I see are activity and output oriented measures, like, install this new HR system, or, get 20,000 new customers, or do something. Those are all output oriented measures. And it doesn't tell you whether you're doing anything to improve customer satisfaction. So switching to an outcome oriented measure, like, improve customer satisfaction as measured by some sort of, you could say, by their usage of a particular feature by 2% might be, an example of an outcome-oriented goal. So stating your OKRs in terms of outcomes helps you become more customer-focused and less internally focused, and that usually has a benefit to your overall business performance.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. And To talk about stuff that people have written, Jeff Gotthelf, we already discussed it a little bit in advance. He has published a blog post where he promotes a pattern to write just better metrics that are really outcome focused and actually with a twist to the outcome should be a human action, a behavioral change, something that people do, not a system or something that is done, but really when we do that, what will happen, right? So what will people be doing differently if we do a great job while we measure this? And he has this really simple pattern where he says essentially who does what by how much, and as long as you ensure, in his opinion, that you write down metrics in that sense, right? So, and then who is really a who, right? So it's never a system or a part of your system. It's never a piece of technology or an AI. It is really a human does something different by a certain percentage. And let's say that human is your customer. Well, what do they do differently? What do they experience differently in the system that you're building for them? And by how much? If you create metrics that reflect that, then I think whether you're using EBM metrics or OKR metrics, it's then easier to really measure an outcome. And also it invites more to do that. So I've been experimenting with that template, and I have to say, in all its simplicity, it's really, really good. And of course there, you need to be mindful that you don't write who does what by how much literally, right? So you don't actually create it as a template and then have the mind filter out everything that becomes repetitive, because then you lose focus. But essentially those questions like who is doing this and what is happening and then by how much is that changing, those three key questions, just like with the user story template, right, that really helps also to make it insightful for people to truly understand, okay, so that's the difference if I write it down. So it's not the website loads faster by a certain percentage. No, it's users do not experience bounces of the homepage, which is exactly the same thing, but from a different perspective.
How long would you say, when you're working with your clients, Lorenz, and you're getting them into this rhythm now, what has been the reaction? And then how long are you spending when you're writing up those types of measurements or goals?
It's actually quite fast, because I usually start with what they're measuring already and then mm-hmm. rephrase it, like retune the metrics they're already using into better ones. Right? So it looks like this is what you're measuring. Why are you doing that? What's the outcome behind that? How could you phrase this in terms of a behavioral change? And then usually as we do that, they change the metric. They change the way that they are measuring it. But they don't experience it as a change, because it starts with something they're already measuring. And then just by asking questions, so what's behind this? Why are you measuring this? It's quite easy to help them along the path of just creating a better set of metrics. And then, in all honesty, I then use EBM, especially the quadrants, to see, so are we in balance here? Like, are we in just one quadrant all the time? Does that make sense given what we're doing as a business, or does it not make sense? And usually it does not make sense. So it's good to balance it out with a healthy set of stuff to measure in all quadrants. That's a very tool-y kind of way to use EBM, I know. So I'm running the risk here. of the wrath of either one of you, but it's still a great place to start, I find. And then because I mention EBM all the time, because I mention OKRs all the time, then they start to ask, okay, so what's this EBM thing you're talking about? And then I usually help them to one of either the classes or just give them the white paper, read this and be inspired by this. And then usually they start to do the work themselves. I find that that's much more helpful than me telling them, because if I tell them, they usually either don't get it or there's immediate resistance. Like, no, I can't really afford to like retool my whole metric set because I have to report to my boss and it has to be these numbers. But when they start to retool their metric set and then are able to explain why it's a better number that they're now reporting, why that actually ties in better with the key objective and what's behind it, then it's an improvement and it's no longer a change. Plus, I then do what Kurt just suggested that everybody should do. It becomes a feedback loop, right? So it is, okay, so this is just an improvement. So when can we see if it actually is an improvement? So in about 1 week, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, we're going to look at the numbers and see what we should change.
That brings up something really important. You mentioned something about, you know, the people feel like they need to report something to their boss. And there's an implication in that that is worth talking about. And it has nothing to do with EBM or OKR specifically, and more how measures and how goals are used. And so a lot of managers make the mistake of using OKRs and to basically reward or punish people. They you know, say, well, if you achieve this objective, then, you know, you'll get a promotion or you get a raise or your group will be rated highly. And the same thing would be true of EBM, you know, if you use goals that way. And the problem with that is that there's a psychology that people don't, you know, the people actually being measured don't want to look bad. And so if you start using OKRs or goals to reward and punish, then people will adapt their behaviors. They'll start gaming the system. And so it has unintended consequences. So one of the harder things that we find for people to do is to basically use the measures to learn and evolve, but don't tie performance, you know, measurement to that. And it's really hard to do. But if you do, if you use OKRs to sort of reward and punish people, then you're going to end up with a game system, and you won't actually, the measures will cease to be useful, because, you know, if you tell people to produce more of X, they will produce more of X. Whether that's the right thing to do or not is immaterial. And so you'll lose the ability to basically gather that kind of feedback and learn and adapt. So try to separate measurement from the whole question of performance, at least at a, you know, you obviously want to reward people for improving customer outcomes and doing things like that. But in terms of specific activities that they might perform or specific outputs that they might perform, you know, don't use it for that. And as much as possible, try to depersonalize and depoliticize the measures. And so when let's say the team fails to achieve an OKR, then your response really should be, well, that's interesting. What can we learn from that? And, you know, what was the measure wrong? Was the objective wrong? Was the approach that we took maybe not the best approach? What could we do to improve in the future? So use it as feedback to improve, but don't punish people for, oh, you made a bad choice about, you know, what you did to pursue that OKR. Bad, bad, bad. Because you won't get the result. In fact, you'll build a system that is almost immune to improvement if you do that. And that's not, I don't think that's the goal of anybody in working with measures. You want to genuinely improve the system and improve the way that people work, but you can't do that if you use it for reward and punishment.
Yes, and as much as I agree with that and I recognize that pattern, I have the hardest time avoiding it, because whether I teach EBM or OKRs or just better KPIs, people are rewarded based on those performance numbers. So for me, it was a really eye-opening thing to just change the phrasing of the number, right? So instead of 80% down in this, where it's easy to either get trapped into gaming that number, really phrase it in terms of an outcome for an either end user or a client. And then when you do that, if you game it, either the client says, no, that's not my experience, so it's really obvious that you've gamed it, which is bad, or you're gaming the right thing, right? So let's really make that client incredibly happy so that number starts to move. It's really hard, even if you game that, to then get a bad result unless it's unbalanced. And that's the other part to this that I think is really, really important. You have to have a balanced set of metrics and not just in one nook or cranny where you have a lot of things to do. And sometimes we over-focus, right? So this is the key thing we need to eliminate, and then we have eliminated that. And essentially, then we look back and we essentially, have destroyed the whole yard or whatever the metaphor is that you want to use there. So for me, it's a key challenge that Kurt points to there. And for the thing that for me works best to change that is to make sure that the numbers, the performance indicators are written in such a way that even if you game them, you end up with the result you want.
Yeah, there's the notion of having metric versus and counter metric. And I think what you were talking about, Lawrence, earlier, was really nice in terms of tying together EBM and OKRs and using it in that tool-y way. But when I think about it, certainly it's this notion that EBM and OKRs is having the best evidence available, data informed. How are you managing the decisions you make? And then, Kurt, I really liked how you were getting into some of the harder conversations that just exist, which is like, we can't do this. This is too hard. And so lucky that both of you wrote a book. A good reminder for the listeners, the Professional Agile Leader book that hits on some of those points. So I definitely would recommend that to people to think about some of those more human aspects and how do we enable and support a team and what type of leader and environment we want to provide. So back to EBM and OKR, I think the decision or the observation that we're making today with Lawrence is that they can coexist and it's not an either or sort of situation. Kurt, you talked about a lot of things that, hey, let's watch what we can avoid. Is there anything else that you'd like to stress and help people with, you know, what happens after EBM OKRs or what else can they do to get started?
Well, to my mind, combining evidence-based management and OKRs, it's actually quite easy, right? So if you just started with, let's say you get started with OKRs because they're all the craze, so that's your starting point. And then if you do that, you just define some specific key results for each objective and then make sure that after that you apply EBM principles to inform your decision making and run some experiments to test strategies for achieving those key results and use the data for that to guide your actions and go from one step to the next, right? And then if you regularly measure your progress towards those key results and continuously evaluate the effectiveness of the strategies that you've defined on empirical evidence, then as long as you actually do something with the evidence, and that is a big as long if the evidence suggests that the current strategies are ineffective, then of course adapt the approach. And that could be adjusting your key results or redefining some objectives. And as long as you do that, you promote transparency and alignment by sharing those objectives, by sharing the key results. And it's really, if you get started and make sure that you define all your metrics as outcomes and not as features or as, what's the other word? Well, anyway, as long as you define it as outcomes, then you're probably good. And if it's not good, you should change something. What do you think, Kurt?
Agree with all that, and there's one more technique that is useful in doing that to get the outcomes is that it basically is a variation on the 5-why approach. It didn't have to be 5, but just asking why. So somebody might have an objective that is more activity or output oriented, and so asking the question, why do we want to achieve that? If the answer is not to improve some kind of customer experience, then you can essentially look at that as an opportunity to improve that objective to make it more outcome oriented. And the same thing with key results is that, a key result, your objective might be to improve customer experience, and the key result might be to improve web page load time by, some percentage. But the question is that really going to improve customer experience? Maybe not. Well, how would we know if it improved customer experience? And then use that to refine both the key results and then the objectives themselves. So I think having that open conversation about why is a really important thing for leaders and teams to do, to try to really understand why are we doing this? Why do we think it's going to get us closer to the objective that we'd like to achieve or the goal that we'd like to achieve? And what might come out of that discussion is a better way to do something. So there's always a tendency for leaders to even inadvertently or unconsciously dictate to teams how to do things. And so to empower those teams to think basically more holistically about how to achieve goals, you know, encourage everyone to ask, why are we doing this? What do we think that's going to achieve? How would we know if we achieve that? And that usually leads to better objectives and key results, and leads to basically better team performance.
Kurt, I agree 100%. I wonder what your response would be to a question that I've certainly gotten is, I appreciate everything that you know, you guys have talked about in terms of outcomes and customers, but I'm supporting headquarters for the car manufacturer in Germany. I'm in Asia. I'm responsible for this little area. You know, my customer essentially is the headquarters. It's, you know, I don't interact ever with the actual buyer and drivers of the cars. How can they see a path?
Well, I would say as long as you're looking at the humans that you're servicing, right? So, and that could be somebody from headquarters. So what will change for the better for them if you improve this? That is the key question. So it doesn't always have to be an end user. It could be the user of the thing that you do, and that can be somebody at headquarters.
I think it's also good to essentially challenge the assertion that, well, nothing that I do is having any impact on customers. It may look that way, but let's say that, you know, in the case of a manufacturer, you're producing a particular component. Might be the airbag, might be the ABS system and the elect braking system, might be something else. And there's almost always a sort of a customer experience aspect to that. It may simply be the reliability of the part, or could be something related to the affordability of the part. So I think that, yes, it's usually true that you're serving some, in a sense, internal customer, but there's almost always an aspect of the thing that you're building that affects the end customer. And the more that you can think about what you can do to improve the experience of the end customer, I think it helps you focus your objectives in a way that just looking at yourself as a cog in the machine doesn't.
Mm-hmm. On that note, before we get into a longer conversation about customers and stakeholders, I wanted to thank you both for this discussion. Obviously, thank you for the listeners for listening. Where is Kurt and Lawrence? Where's somewhere that people can check out some of the next things or some of the things that you're working on? What's coming up next for you? Why don't we start with you, Kurt?
Well, this, you know, because we've been working on it together, Patricia and I and two other authors have a book on EBM coming out. Look around for a book on EBM coming out from Pearson as part of the Scrum.org series, and we hope that you will get a lot out of that.
I'm going to see if I can pre-order that book right after.
Okay. Lawrence, what about you? I know you're doing so much work.
Yeah, currently I'm focused a lot on Obeya for, well, actually it's weird. It just happened all of a sudden that everything that I do combined into let's do more with Obeya. So the stuff with metrics and EBM and OKRs and how to tie all that together with graphic facilitation, for me tying that together into Obeya roams turned out to be the ideal thing. So that's what I'm doing a lot nowadays. And I'm having a ton of fun there. Plus, organizations do get more effective if they see their information, either on a wall or in a digital system. That doesn't really matter, but as long as they can see it, for some reason it makes it easier to act on it. So it's better to have it nicely visualized and easy to focus on instead of just in an Excel sheet or as a metric somewhere. And that's the thing that we tend to overlook in Lean in general, but also in stuff like this, that the way you visualize this information is very important, or at least I hope it is, because that's what I'm doing nowadays.
Oh, that's fascinating. I want to chat about that more, especially when people start to get into the conversation about dashboards and stuff. But anyways, thank you so much both. And thank you everyone for listening today.